Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a lovely weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, June the 9th. Coming up, the man who oversees the police in Kent admits he'd be up for being Kent's first mayor. A little boy from Kent who was abused by his birth parents gets an amazing gift, and find out which Olympic gold medalist has been swimming in the sea off Kent. But first up today, it's been revealed children as young as 4 have been suspended from Kent schools amid a rise in the number of exclusions across the county. Well, Kate joins me now on the podcast with more on this story. So, Kate, what do the stats show?
Well, in the school year that ended in July 2024, 107 children were permanently excluded from schools in Kent. That's up from just 30 the previous year. And across the same period, the number of suspensions increased by almost 70%, with more than 21,000. Shockingly, 247 of those were issued to pupils in reception classes.
Startling statistics there, Kate. Is there any reason for it?
Well, the numbers follow a trend across the country following COVID. The lockdowns that started in 2020 affected many children's formative years, and many have either started or returned to school and struggled to adapt to the structure within a classroom. Experts say the consequences are unravelling, particularly among those hitting their teenage years.
And we've heard from a former head teacher in the county.
That's right. Peter Reed is now an education consultant, and he obtained this data on exclusions. He believes the rise is being fuelled by a combination of post-pandemic fallout, mental health issues, underfunding and teacher shortages. He told us teachers have a tougher job now than they did before COVID, but has also said the profession is in crisis with a lack of teachers, which contributes to poor pupil behaviour.
So what have we heard from Kent County Council as the local education authority?
Well, they've acknowledged there has been a noticeable increase in suspensions and permanent exclusions both nationally and in Kent. They've gone on to say, despite the rise, the rate of suspensions in Kent remains more than 25% lower than the national rate and nearly a fifth lower than the southeast rate. A spokesman has also said they will continue to do all they can to ensure all young people in Kent have access to the appropriate educational provisions they deserve.
Kate, thank you ever so much. Well, you can in fact see more of a breakdown of those stats by heading to Kent Online today, which is where you can also let us know what you think.
Kent Online News.
A man's been arrested after a woman reported being threatened with a weapon and sexually assaulted in Folkestone. Police were called to King's North Gardens shortly before 1 on Friday afternoon. The victim says she was approached by a man she knew before being attacked. A 53-year-old has been questioned and bailed. A court said there's no anticipated release date for a Kent prisoner who threw a kettle of boiling water over a guard. 43-year-old Dominic Hedges carried out the attack in his cell in Elmley Prison on Sheppey last May. He was 1 month into a 16-month sentence for assaults on emergency workers at the time. The officer has since returned to work. Armed police have been seen in Tunbridge Wells following reports of a man displaying concerning behaviour. Firearms officers responded to several areas yesterday, including Schofields Road, Camden Road, Clifton Gardens and at Highbrooms Railway Station. Drones and the police helicopter were also spotted. It's since been confirmed it was a false alarm. Now, the man who oversees the police in Kent has told us he'd be interested in becoming the county's first mayor. But Matthew Scott has urged the government to speed up any reorganisation of local government. Things have stalled in Kent after authorities here were told they weren't in the first phase of what's known as devolution. The Crime Commissioner says it's left a lot of uncertainty.
The Office of the Kent Police and Crime Commissioner is very likely to be abolished in the ongoing local government reorganisation, because the Kent Police Authority area lines up pretty much exactly with the new strategic mayoral authority. What are your thoughts on that? Since your job is one way or another probably for the chop, what should replace it?
Well, that's the thing. We don't really know what's going to happen in Kent now, because the government said one thing about devolution, and instead of devolution, we've got top-down reorganisation instead. If the government wants to introduce mayors with PCC's powers, then they need to get on and do it. That's not an issue for me. If they want to roll the Office of Police and Crime Commissioner into a new mayoralty, then so be it. But actually, I would argue that police and crime commissioners, with that direct control and work and responsibility for policing, is having an effect. It is working really, really well. The thing is with this government, they announce things and then they U-turn. So we just don't know what it is they're going to do. All I'm focused on over the next 3 years is the next 3 years of my term until 2028, cutting crime, supporting victims, building trust.
One of the last things I wanted to ask. So, yeah, you are, despite being police and crime commissioner, you are obviously a Conservative Party politician and a former councillor. I guess when you went into politics, you probably didn't see your career starting and ending as the police and crime commissioner of a non-metropolitan county. So when your job does end up going, might we expect to see you in the, you know, standing for one of the new unitary authorities or maybe even for mayor of Kent?
If it happens, I would be interested. Of course I would. There's a lot that we could do with a properly established mayoral office. I think there's a great misunderstanding, though, about what the powers that the mayors will have, because it's a combined authority with councillors represented on it as well, and it's not straightforward executive power like there is in London. So we have to see what those powers are going to look like. But of course, why would I not be interested?
Matthew was chatting there on the latest episode of the Kent Politics podcast. You can hear it in full by heading to im-listening.co.uk.
Kent Online reports.
A Snodland man has appeared in court accused of stealing from the same BP garage 9 times in as many weeks. James Smith took more than £200 worth of food from the shop on Holborough between January and March this year. The 55-year-old who lives in Saltings Road has been ordered to pay compensation. Two men have been arrested in unrelated incidents following a police crackdown on antisocial behaviour. Volunteer officers from the Kent and Met Police Forces led the joint operation in Dartford, Gravesham and Medway. A 49-year-old was arrested on suspicion of assault in Gravesend, whilst a 41-year-old was charged with being drunk and disorderly in Gillingham High Street. A little boy from Kent who needed both of his legs amputated has been sent a signed football shirt from David Beckham. 10-year-old Tony Hudgell from Westmorling was just weeks old when he suffered appalling abuse at the hands of his birth parents. It was revealed last week that Tony's birth mother, Jodie Simpson, is due to be released from jail. Tony's adoptive mum, Paula, said after a challenging week, the surprise gift had lifted the family's spirits. And you can see a picture of Tony with his shirt at Kent Online.
Kent Online reports.
A woman who pretended to be a solicitor at court hearings and police stations in Kent is facing jail. Sean Jacobs represented individuals in both family and criminal matters over the course of 6 months, scamming thousands out of her victims. The 50-year-old, who lives in Norwich, is going to be sentenced next month. She's been released on bail until then. Now, a protest walk has been held on Romney Marsh by campaigners who are angry at plans for solar and energy storage schemes. Possible projects include the 1,500-acre South Kent Energy Park and the 1,000-acre Shepway Energy Park. Now, local group Hands Off Our Marsh say the schemes will mean the loss of farming land the size of 1,900 football pitches. Kim Gowing is one of the organisers.
Currently, just in and amongst the marsh, there's three proposals that are publicly known. There's the one in South Kent, which is 1,500 acres. New Church, which is the Shepway Energy Park, was just announced 2 weeks ago. That's another 1,000 acres. Both of those are considered to be NSIPs. So they're nationally significant infrastructure projects, which means they bypass local planning and they get approved through the planning inspectorate, which is Ed Miliband. So those are for those two. And then the one in St. Mary in the Marsh, that's about 100 acres. It's much smaller, and that will go through local planning. So the cumulative impact, which is really, really important to us, 2,600 acres of all prime grade 1-2, maybe a small amount of grade 3 land, but we're talking best and most versatile land across the marsh area, which is known for its landscape and its beauty. And that's a lot. And to put in perspective, because that's 2,600 acres, it's hard for people to conceptualize what that means, but it's almost 1,800, 1,900 football pitches, which I think is a common term for people to understand here. So it's huge. And the point of the walk is that it's like many things. You've got people that there's a general apathy. It's not in my backyard. I can't see it. It's not going to impact me. And what we're trying to help people understand, regardless of their views on climate change, solar, it doesn't really matter. We just want to make sure people that understand the scale and what the impact on our, just the countryside will be, and on our food security, so that they can help to help them make informed choices as to whether they support it or not. So cumulatively, that's our main issue here, 2,600 acres and counting, because we are anticipating at least one more project to be announced over the coming months.
We've spoken about the loss of farmland in the area. What about the environmental impacts, as well as any consideration we've been giving to what impact it's going to have on local wildlife and sort of air quality and things like that?
Yeah, because we haven't seen, because of where both proposals are, we haven't seen the formal assessments that have been done yet for the one in New Church, sorry, not New Church, the one in Old Romney. We don't think we'll see anything further from low carbon until the end of this year when they come out with their formal proposal. But from our perspective, we're certainly, one of the things that was recommended was that we start capturing photographs, lots of photographs of where we see wildlife and nature. I mean, yesterday I was walking in Old Romney and there was a ditch there, and there was a family of two swans and six cygnets going by. So I was taking pictures of that. So we're trying to capture as much as we can. But more formally, we're also looking to get in touch with the Badger Trust, because we know we've got a lot of badger sets around and bats, lots of different things that we're now trying to capture and identify, so that we're not just relying on the developers with their assessments to be saying this is the way it is. We're trying to, as a community, start to identify and capture a lot of those impacts as well.
Elsewhere, plans to convert an abandoned Victorian chapel near Dover into a house have been approved. The 159-year-old building in West Langdon was last used as a place of worship 6 years ago. The current owners say it'll be restored to its former glory. You can see pictures at Kent Online. There are renewed calls for an historic building in Northfleet to be restored after it suffered damage in a number of fires. The former Portland's Factory Club has been empty for the past 30 years, but in that time it suffered at least four blazes. It's understood the family that own the site are eventually hoping to restore it. Plans have been put in for 120 homes on the outskirts of Canterbury. Developers want to build on land off Pope's Lane in Sturry. Opponents say it's not the right location, though. And plans have been submitted for a new house on the site of a mansion near Maidstone, which burned down in 2021. Bellringham House on Headcorn Road in Sutton Valence had been empty for years when it was destroyed in a case of suspected arson.
Kent Online News.
Now, dozens of households in Maidstone are celebrating after their council tax banding was downgraded following a campaign by residents. There were complaints from some people on the Hermitage Park estate who were in different bands from neighbours in similar homes. The majority have seen their banding go from a D to a C, saving them hundreds of pounds each year. Traders and residents in Folkestone have hit back against a TikTok video claiming the town is a dump. The clip, which attracted more than 24,000 likes, portrays boarded up shops and run-down buildings. Locals say the video takes cheap shots and ignores many of Folkestone's positives. Now, Rebecca Adlington's been in Kent to take part in an endurance swim to raise awareness of protecting our oceans. The former Olympian was joined by Happy Valley star James Norton at Joss Bay and admitted it was pretty tough. She chatted to our colleagues from KMTV.
It's absolutely incredible to be down here at Joss Bay. I mean, I've never been here before, so firstly, it's an absolutely incredible spot, and to be taking part in the Talisker Wild Boot Swim Challenge is just incredible. I am not an experienced sea swimmer. It's not something that I've done much of, and I feel like throughout every time I've got in today, I've just built in loads of confidence and just feel a lot more comfortable being in the sea, which has been a huge thing for myself.
Amazing, thank you. And not only being down here at Joss Bay, but how has it felt obviously raising money for the Marine Charity?
Oh, it's so nice to know that a challenge for me, I don't want something that is super competitive or is anything like that anymore. I've had my days of doing the competitive stuff, so now I want to do stuff that's really, really meaningful, something that's totally worthwhile, and that is absolutely what today is about. Raising vital funds and awareness of the Blue Marine Foundation and the incredible work that they're doing. But even more so when you're doing the swim and it's cold and you're getting to the point where you're kind of battling a little bit, you just tell yourself what we're here for and how much it's going to help for that ocean restoration as well. So it's just incredible.
And as a swimmer, why do you think it's important to preserve our oceans and open water spaces?
Yeah, I think we're really, really lucky in the UK that we've got some incredible spots like the one we're here. But even across the UK, whether it's rivers, lakes, etc., we've got some amazing wild open water spots. Obviously, there is dangers to them, so we have to be quite careful, certainly in this country, with how cold it gets and just understanding how deep the water is, etc. But I think it's one of those that I've always felt a really deep connection to water, and it doesn't matter what water that is. I just love the feeling of swimming and being out at just in open space. I just think it's absolutely incredible. And I think we all, if you live near the coast, we all kind of have a bit more of a connection to it because they see it. And the local community here, I think, are really knowledgeable on the marine life, on the sea. Whereas actually, once you get deeper away into the country, not so many people hear about it and see it firsthand. So it's important to raise that awareness for everybody around the UK.
It was all done to mark World Ocean Day and to raise funds, as you heard, for Blue Marine Foundation, which works to protect marine life. And an art installation inspired by the moon landing is opening at Canterbury Cathedral today. It includes a 16-metre hand-woven textile honouring women who wove NASA circuits. The free-to-view exhibit is at the cathedral until the end of August.
Kent Online Sports.
Football now, and Bradley Dack has revealed he's got some unfinished business ahead of a new season at Gillingham. The 31-year-old has signed on for another year after only making 20 appearances during the last campaign. He's been chatting to the club's media team.
I really wanted to stay. I kind of made that clear to the people that needed to know, obviously the manager and the staff and Joe and Brad and Shannon. I said that, listen, I'd love to stay in some capacity, and luckily enough they all agreed, and we got something done pretty quickly, pretty easily. I didn't really want to do anything else, to be honest. There was nothing that really come up that really sparked my interest. I wanted to come here last year was to get promoted, and we didn't achieve that so that feels like unfinished business to me, and that's what I want to be here to do.
Going into the season as well, wasn't it? Since the gaffer's come in, we're unbeaten under him and Richard Dobson, of course. It just seems there's a real positive energy about the place. And I guess, I suppose, weighing up your options, you must have thought, well, we're going somewhere.
100%, yeah. Listen, we had a great end to the season. I think we was 12 unbeaten to finish. And the manager and Dobbo have come in and they've been first class. I've said it before. Their mentality, the way they drive standards has been really, really good and nice for me to see, and they're taking the club in a great direction, and I wanted to be part of that. And yes, I've loved working with them. I like the group of players that we have. I think it's a real hard-working group, and things didn't go right last year, and there's lots of reasons why, and there's a lot of people to blame for that, and that's including the players. But I think it's a collective blame, as the club as a whole just didn't really work what we was trying to do, and sometimes it happens in football. But new guys come in and, like I said, really positive. Mentality's been fantastic. And it's become a really enjoyable place to go and work. And I think that's so important in football. Every successful team that I've been involved in, the environment, the work environment has been first class, and that's the feeling I get with this one as well.
He joins Ewan Williams and Max Clark in agreeing terms to stay at Priestfield. Tennis now, and Kent's Emma Raducanu says it'll be amazing to be part of the first women's tournament at Queen's for more than half a century. It's been 52 years since it last happened, with the Lawn Tennis Association hoping to achieve greater visibility for the sport. The 22-year-old from Orpington will play doubles alongside British number one Katie Balter later. And in cricket, Zach Crawley hit an unbeaten half century to help Kent to an 8-wicket win over Hampshire Hawks in the T20 Blast. It's his last game before departing for England duty. The Spitfires' next Vitality Blast match is against Surrey on Thursday. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, great. You can sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, or one word at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.